Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening, everyone. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Bellevue, Washington, and tonight is Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. This is scan number 2748. Tonight is special guest night, and we have a very special guest with us this evening, the amazing Claudia Marulanda from New York City, New York. I'll tell you a little bit more about Claudia. She provided us with a very lovely bio. Is very detailed. I will get a little bit more into Claudia's background in a moment. But first, I want to encourage you, if you'd like to call in to the show and be a member of our panel, I would encourage you to do so. You'll have an opportunity to interact with Claudia and ask her a question or comment regarding her skills required to be a panelist. This call-in number is 646-595-2118. So the number is 646-595-2118, and we will welcome you into the show. You can remain anonymous if you wish. Let's talk to you for a moment about NASCA, what it is, and repeat its mission statement. So NASCA, National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through so many paths, such as this show, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So if you wish to be a member of the panel, I invite you to call in at area code 646-595-2118. But before I bring Claudia on, I wanted to talk a little bit about how our special guest night is structured. First and foremost, this is Claudia's opportunity to tell us her story, which is a very, very, very brave, as I always mention, I believe, it's a very, very brave and giving gift to come on and tell your story. And we do special guest nights in the following manner. They are structured for consistency. So we look at the life chronologically, and we break up the show into three segments. So in the first segment, our guest will talk about her earliest years, her earliest memories from basically birth to about the age of 18. I'll lead with questions in the beginning of the interview. And we like to just build a to give context to our listeners, understand Claudia a little bit better, including her family of origin, where she was born, who was in the family, to establish some contacts and paint that picture. And then we'll talk her as she is to the age of 18. We then break to the panel, and the panel will have an opportunity to ask Claudia a question or pose a comment regarding and related to Claudia's story. In the middle segment, Claudia will talk about around the ages of 18 to 30. Then we'll break again, and the panel will have hopefully two opportunities to interact with our guests during the show. And then the last segment, we'll talk about 30 plus to the healing process and currently what Claudia is doing in the current day and her plans for the future. So it's broken into three segments. Yes, it's a 90-minute show. Goes by very, very, very fast, believe it or not. I know 90 minutes sounds like a long time, but the time does fly when we do these shows. So without further ado, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about Claudia. So although I mentioned that Claudia is from New York City, New York now, she was originally born in Colombia. In her bio, she did write that her child abuse started early, and she was abused by two individuals when she lived in Colombia. One was a family member. To her earliest memory, which we'll hear about later, she gives a timeline of when that started. And the second person was a man who lived in the same home, but not related, again, when she was very young. That's all I'm going to tell you about Claudia for the first segment. She's here to tell her story, but I will read parts of her bio as we go through the different segments of the show. So, Claudia, without further ado, I'm going to unmute your mic, which I'm doing right now. And you're on live, and I'm just first going to say thank you so much for being with us here at NASCA this evening.
Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And you're now, you know, a member of the NASCA family, right? We call ourselves a family. So when is this your first show with us, or have you done the show before?
No, this is my first show, and this is my first time talking about this.
Well, it's our honor, and it's nice to be your host this evening and for you to come on the NASCA show and talk about your story. And I want to let you know this is a platform on this show that is really designed just for you and for so many of us that have come for the first time and told the story to the public. So those that are listening and those that will be joining our panel we might have slightly different experiences, but a lot of our feelings are the same. And you are in a place where you are in company, and you're going to have empathy. So this is the place where we hope we will make you feel comfortable in doing so.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And as I mentioned to you before we started the show, I've been there myself, and I know. And it's very, very courageous, because not only are you telling your story, but there's some people that stream and listen that are on the cusp of their healing journey, and you are giving them the courage and inspiring them to do the same. You're helping so many people by coming on. You truly are. For those of you listening and streaming, I'm going to encourage you to call in and give Claudia your support and become a panel member. It is, again, a lot of courage to come on the show and tell your story, and it's helpful to have panel members to bring their support and ask questions. So please call in. So, Claudia, as we begin, I know I talked about the structure of the show, and just to give some context, I'd like to know, I know you said you were born in Colombia, so can you let us know just, you know, from, like, the time you were born, maybe who was in the household, exactly where you lived, you know, the members of the family, if you had siblings, a little bit about the people who were your guardians, if they were your parents or you were, you know, just a little context for us in the beginning.
Sure.
As we begin.
Okay. Sure. So yes, I was born in Colombia. I lived in a big home with my mother until I was 6 years old, and she came to this country. But I lived with my uncle, my grandmother, and lots of cousins. And there were a couple of rooms in the back of the house that were rented to people. So there was always a lot of people in the house. It was a big house. And basically, I know that I was abused when I was very young. I don't really have much memory of it. I only know that it happened because I have, like, slight memories of it. And then when I was 13, I went back to my country for the first time. And that person wrote me a love letter. So that kind of, like, confirmed that something had happened. Then at one point, like you said, I was probably around 6 or 7, that one of the people that lived in the house had sexually abused me, and that I have some memories of it. And then when I was 10, I came to this country, and unfortunately, my mother's husband abused me. So luckily, it wasn't for too long. I think it was just for several months. And then I stopped, and I just never really spoke about it. I sort of pretended that it didn't happen. We all lived together.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've already given us a lot of information. And just for those listening, I just want to make sure that I'm just going to kind of repeat what you said and test our understanding so we can follow, okay? And I know this is so hard to talk about. So from my understanding is that you were born in Colombia, and you live with your mother and some family members in a home. So there were multiple people in the home. Did you have any siblings?
Yes, one. A brother.
Okay, and was he older or younger?
Older.
Okay. By how many years? I mean, is there an age difference there?
3 years. 3 years. Okay. There was a couple of cousins that lived in the house also. They were like, I only had one cousin that was about my age, and then like 3 more cousins that were like 5 years older than me.
Okay, so were they males or females?
Mostly females. The only male was my brother, and one of the cousin that was my age was also a male.
Okay, and then was your father present in your early life or a father figure?
He used to come and visit me and pick me up sometimes, but we didn't have, like, a close relationship.
Okay. All right. So he didn't live in the home, but you didn't know him, your father.
Mm-hmm.
And then from my understanding then, and from your bio, you said in the home in Colombia, your earliest memory of abuse was your mother's cousin. And you believe the abuse started when you were very young, possibly 4 or 5 years old, possibly younger. Is that a correct statement?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Do you remember the nature of your abuse at all? Do you have memories of that?
I don't have any memories of what happened with him. I remember just once being in a dark room with him. And he just told me not to tell anyone, but I don't remember anything at all. And what I remember is when I was 13 that I went back, that he wrote me a whole love letter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the love letter is the person you're referring to.
And
well,
he was a lot older than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you do remember, right? Because you remember being told that whatever happened, and of course a lot of us, you know, when we're children, to survive, we just dissociate and we repress the memory, a lot of the details of the memory, but you do have some recollection because you remember at the time being told not to tell anyone. So you knew, even at that young age, and you remember that there was something that did happen that was abusive, that was not okay for that 4 or 5-year-old girl. So you do have a memory, really.
Yeah.
And then you had a confirmation by the love letter that you received in writing. And then you mentioned you were 13 years at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned still in Colombia that you had a second person who abused you as a man who lived in the house, and you believe you were about 7 years of age.
Correct.
Yeah. Do you remember or feel comfortable about talking about the nature of that or those incidents with that second person?
I don't have like, I don't remember details. I do know it was sexual because I do remember seeing myself pretty much naked in his bedroom.
Yeah. So you do have that memory.
Yeah.
How did you feel at the time, you know, at 10 years old? Yes, you have, you can see the picture. Do you remember how you felt?
Well, I mean, when that happened, I was like 6 or 7. I don't remember. No, I just don't remember how I felt. I remember that I don't know if this is incorrect, because sometimes we have memories that we don't know if it's right. But at that time, my mom was in the U.S. So I thought I had wrote her a letter saying what happened. But apparently she never received that letter. And later on in life, I spoke to my uncle about it because he was the one taking care of me. And he says that he doesn't remember ever seeing a letter that I said that. So I'm assuming that at some point that I knew it was wrong and I wrote her a letter about it.
So you.
But apparently
you said,
she.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No, so apparently, you know, like in my mind, I that's my thought that I wrote her a letter, but apparently she never got a letter. And when I asked my uncle many years later, he said that he never read a letter like that, so he didn't know about it either.
Do you think that your mother was aware that something, some of these things that this abuse and maltreatment was going on? And she was living with you in the home. Curious.
Well, when the abuse happened, that when I wrote that letter, that's when I was in Colombia and she was in this country. The abuse that happened later on with my stepfather, I never told her.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she was aware of it.
So you moved to the United States, and you were 10 years old, and you went to live in the USA, and you just mentioned that your stepfather sexually abused you. So you were living with your mother at the time and your stepfather. Mm-hmm. Was your brother in the home as well at that time in the United States?
Yes.
He was, okay.
Yeah.
So you have a very clear memory then of your stepfather's abuse, it sounds like.
I do, and it's interesting, I guess, how the brain works, because I don't remember any detail. I do remember him going into my bedroom and touching me, or sometimes telling my brother to go out to the store and buy something, and the store wasn't that close, it was at a distance. So he would make sure that I was alone in the house with him. That I do know.
And you don't think that your mother had any inkling that this was going on?
Yeah, I don't think she knew this was going on.
So you have a pretty clear memory of being 10 years old and having your stepfather sexually abuse you. Do you remember how you felt, or possibly how you reacted to that after those incidents occurred?
So I know it started slowly because, you know, I was old enough to remember most of it. Like sometimes he would ask me to kiss him like on the cheek. And then I guess eventually he asked me, I guess, to kiss him on the lips. And then he just started molesting me. And I guess that's the part that becomes shameful. Because as an adult, I was like, you know, I allowed it and I didn't say anything to anyone.
And I understand the shame. I understand the shame. You're speaking to, and we have John from Louisiana. He's my co-host tonight and a NASCA family member. I've unmuted your line, John. Thanks for joining us. And both John and I understand. We completely understand. We both experience sexual abuse, and we understand the shame and the self-blame that accompanies abuse. I just want to let you know, Claudia, whether you realize it or not, you just absolutely brilliantly described the grooming process. So your stepfather...
Yes, she did.
She did. He kissed you on the cheek, and then he moved to kiss you on the lips. And here you are feeling guilty that, you know, 10-year-old girl is not responsible for the behavior of a grown man who knows better. Grown men do not kiss 10-year-old girls on the lips. Mm-hmm. He groomed you. Yeah, and I'm going to let John actually, you know, get the comment. But, you know, I understand the shame and the guilt, but you just described grooming.
Okay.
And you're helping other people understand that are in your shoes as well, the whole concept of grooming and how this evolved. Mm-hmm. And also to share your feelings about feeling somewhat responsible, feeling ashamed. They even stop it because of self-blame, right? Screams at his children like super glue, right? And this is just the evil aspect of the grooming piece, is that it's not only a physical violation, it's an emotional one as well. So I'd like John to also comment and lend you some support on this.
Okay.
So, I don't know if John can hear me or not, but John is on the line. We both understand. So I just want to let you know that your feelings, you're just, as you know, you're not alone in those. I mean, so many of us can totally relate to what you're saying because, you know, we've had very similar experiences and we felt the exact same way. But by even describing the grooming process, you are helping to educate people that might be just listening and thinking that either A, nothing happened, or B, it was their fault, so they should not come forward. And grooming is very surreptitious.
Yeah,
you know?
I didn't even think of it as a grooming process, not until now that you're saying that.
Exactly. You just defined it for so many people. You're helping so many people understand that. So you did not mention to him because you felt responsible, some sense of responsibility is what I'm hearing.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, because I felt like in the beginning he made it seem like a game. So I just followed that game. But then I did know there was something wrong.
And that's a mind game, right? That's another grooming tactic, right? This is a game, right? This is fun, right? It's almost an induction, right? It's an induction into what evolves into something more overt. Do you know how many times this happened? Not that it matters.
No, I think it just happened a few months. I'm guessing 4 or 5 months, and then he stopped.
So this is going on for 4 or 5 months. Now, I keep on asking you about your mother. I'm a mother. I have 3 sons, but I just feel like I would sense something in my children and in my child if there was something going on. So we, you know, typically do ask questions like, how were your moods? Did your behavior change? You know, were there signs that maybe, you know, as a little girl, when we're children, we're experiencing this, you know, if we can't even articulate it, you know, we might, our demeanor and our behavior might change. We might become more withdrawn. We might start, you know, exhibiting other behaviors that are really not, you know, normal for us. We may start acting out in school. I'm just wondering if you can remember how, you know, you felt, how you were reacting, and if there was any changes at the time that would have been something to note.
I didn't tell my mom about this until like 3 years ago. So I believe her when she said she didn't know any of it. And it could be also because I lived without her 4 years. And the abuse started probably about the same time, like 4 or 5 months after. Let me see. maybe sooner. After I arrived to this country, I remember they were living in Brooklyn, and a few months later they moved to Queens. And I know the abuse started when we were in Queens, right after we moved to Queens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I'm just guessing that she hadn't lived with me, so she didn't know exactly how I behave. I don't know. That's just my guess.
So when you moved to Queens, I could get you going to school. I mean, did you have a safe place or some place where you could go and escape and find, you know, a happy place, whether it was school or activities or a friend or something?
I went to school, but at the time I didn't speak English. I was learning English at the time. And mm-hmm. I did love my school. Everyone was very friendly. Everyone was always very helpful. So I did feel safe in school. I always felt good with the people that I was with. I had a teacher, Ms. Gallagher, that I always remember her name because she was super nice to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I'm glad that you had, you know, we ask that question a lot. You know, was there a place that you could escape, right, that you could just go and have, you know, a little oasis, you know, in this desert of, you know, maltreatment that you were definitely faced with when you were living in a home? And, you know, moving to Queens from where you were and moving, obviously, from a foreign country can be very, very isolating. So, you know, especially when you're not feeling that you're not safe in your home.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you had, and it sounds like you did have a teacher that really gave you some nurturing, basically, right, some positive treatment that was helpful for you.
Yes, she did.
So, John, I'm going to invite you in. We're actually 30 minutes in the show, so I'm going to invite you in and introduce you to Claudia. And I don't know if you have a question or a comment for Claudia, but I'm sure she'd love
sure.
to hear from you. As well.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Claudia. How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great, great. So where are you located at?
I'm in Queens.
Yeah,
I never
Queens?
Left Queens.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, yeah. I saw it was in New York. I just didn't know what area it was in. So I know y'all just had some pretty bad weather up that way too, huh?
Oh, yeah, with the hurricane.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I just got slammed in Louisiana. Usually I have my computer and set up and everything. I have no internet or TV right now, so I'm having to call in just like you. So usually I could read more on your biography, but I did go in and read some things, and I tell you, you know, the biggest thing that I can take out of everything I've heard out of you so far is beyond bravery, number one. But, you know, with NASCA's, you know, one of our main purposes is educating the public, you know,
mm-hmm.
and with you going out and actually giving a vivid, detailed description on the way things were happening to you. And you described it perfectly, and it's just the way that it needs to be told. Because if people don't realize and see the signs with coming from a true victim such as yourself, you know, it opens their eyes, you know, and this is what it's all about, you know. So that's the first thing that really just hit me so hard when I was listening to you tell your story, and I just really commend you for that, because that's what I live off of, basically, you know. We have to see the signs early, and you know, and just part of your natural conversation, it came right out, and this is exactly what the people need to hear, only because it's the least people you think, you know, that it's happening to them, like a stepfather, like a neighbor, you know, like an uncle, you know, but yes, it starts off with things like that, so. This is where we have to stop. You know, we have to stop it. You know, with more people being educated and you bringing it out that early, that's going to be a huge mm-hmm. impact right there, because it's going to open up a lot of eyes. It's going to start raising questions, you know. then with also it does, and this is my favorite part, and I hate to say there's any favorite parts to this, we put those, you know what, in jail, okay,
mm-hmm.
where they belong. So I can't wait to hear the rest of your story. I'd like to tell you, you know, some more about myself later on, but this is your night. You're doing a great job. You sound wonderful. Keep it up. And I'm going to be taking some notes along the way, too. And I'll have some more questions for you at the end, okay?
Okay, got it. So do I continue now?
Thanks, John.
Yes.
So I just wanted to say thank you so much, John. And just let you know, it's you and myself and Claudia on the line right now. And Claudia, we get people calling in all during the show. So, you know, we may add a few more panel members. But just to let you know that that's where we are. I always like to say, you know, who's called in on the line. And that doesn't mean that people aren't listening and streaming, and a lot of people stream in. And
the world.
Yeah, all over the world. All over the world. In different continents.
Okay.
In different continents. So your voice is being heard, and you are helping so many people. And to John's point, we were talking about this on our Monday night show. We were talking a lot about NASCA and just the education piece. And, you know, the more we can bring the courage, and which is what you're doing tonight, to tell our stories. And I know I was shaking in my boots the first time I told mine. It was 3 years ago. Those who are listening, who hear your story and who start to understand the nature of abuse, who realize, who are able to bring up those repressed memories or those memories that they sort of, you know, remember, or that maybe they're hiding behind some shameful feelings, you know, you're expediting the process of them realizing that they need to bring this out, because obviously we have soap in our lives, our bodies, our minds. We get reminded through different things that we have these things that are repressed.
Would you get my drink on my desk?
You are absolutely helping people to start that process earlier. And to what John said, you know, the average age, believe it or not, Claudia, of people, adults going through the healing process from abuse and from sexual abuse is around the mid to late 40s, early 50s. So if people can start that process earlier, I mean, I wish we could just eradicate abuse of children and all types of abuse and trauma, but I don't think that's realistic in my lifetime. But if we can start helping people and educating people and having people realize and start the process earlier, which is what you're doing tonight by sharing your story, they'll be able to start the healing journey earlier and get to that other side, right? So starting earlier is really the key, and that's what you are helping so many people. So I just wanted to mention that as well. And now that we're in the middle segment of the show, so I want to know, so you were – that you did go to college, and so why don't you just start filling us in? You can pick up where you wish, but I'd like to know about those, you know, middle years, you know, those maybe the end of the school years going into the, you know, the college years and up until about 30, 32 years old. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. So basically, to describe my adolescent years, I guess I have to come to my present, because I now realized that I was not like the typical girl, and I knew that I was different. I was very quiet, withdrawn, isolated from people. I had a few friends, but I didn't relate to people much. And I always had there was always something sad about me, but I didn't really realize it. I just thought that I was like weird. So it's kind of crazy, because the effects of the abuse is has always been there, but when you're like oblivious to those effects, you just think that that's who you are, but it's not really who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 19, I became pregnant, and I had my son, and I became a single mom. And pretty much all my life, like I went to school, I went to college. Thank God I was able to form a career. I became a graphic designer, so I was able to support my son without any issues. But I used to be sort of like a workaholic. And I did, all through that time, I did have like a relationship with my stepfather. It was a pretty normal relationship because he's still with my mother. And here and there, you know, I used to have thoughts, like there was a time he went through a very difficult period. And I do remember thinking, oh, you know, maybe this is the way of him paying for what he did for me. So I do remember having those thoughts, even though I had like a, what you will call like a normal relationship with him. I mean, I never, when I was younger, my mom wanted me to call him dad, and I told her no. So I would never do that. And to people, he was just my stepfather. So pretty much that was my life. I had very low self-esteem. And I mean, now I understand that I didn't feel worthy because I had a lot of issues, and I didn't talk about this until I was 40.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Did your mom ever get any red flags that you didn't want to call him dad?
Could you repeat the question?
Did it ever give your mother any red flags or any cause, you know, for pause that you wouldn't call your stepfather dad?
No, I just told her, you know, I have my father, which I never really had a good relationship with him either. But I that was in the beginning. So, of course, you know, after everything that happened, I knew that I would never call him, you know, dad or anything like that. So, but I don't think she had the red flags. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I just had to ask that question because I just, you know, I didn't know if that would have, you know, if there was any discussion around that or not. Why do you think that your stepfather stopped abusing you all of a sudden?
He did said he didn't want my mom to know.
Hmm.
So he stopped, you know, doing whatever he was doing.
Was he abusive in other ways?
Like violent or anything like that?
Yeah.
Could you repeat?
Did he ever threaten you? Did he ever threaten you?
No.
So, okay.
No, it just stopped and we never spoke about it. It was just like it never happened.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Did he treat your mother well?
Later on, I found out of other stuff that he did. He did cheat on her with one of my cousins. My mom found out like almost 20 years later. So I'm sure he did other stuff that she didn't know about.
And the reason I'm asking these questions is and maybe John can provide a little more data on this, but from what I know and what I've read, that pedophiles don't normally just stop and usually have more than one victim. And that's where my question was coming from. I mean, and I just, in my own experience, the thing that keeps me up at night is wondering how many more victims there were of the person that sexually abused me. And I suspect, you know, I know some of them, and they're not willing to come forward. But knowing that, you know, statistically speaking, clinically speaking from the data, what we know is that the incidence and the prevalence just from one perpetrator is pretty wide, is usually pretty widespread. And John, I don't know if you have any more data on that or not, but
absolutely.
You know.
I'll tell you that as history goes, okay, and you know how it is, everybody wants to put a statistic on something, okay? Yes, I'd say a lot of times statistics are correct, but there's a lot of instances that do happen where that same thing does happen. I've heard of that. And it doesn't surprise me to hear it. It's not the first time, but it is a rare instance. So yeah, anything can happen with people, you know, and I've always looked at that where it either happened with one of two things. Either he got to the point where he felt so guilty over it, okay, or he confessed to it and let it go. That's the two times that I've heard of people of ending it in that fashion, so to speak, okay? Usually, though, and I would say probably about 90%, does not stop. You know, that's the stat on that. Yeah, once they start, they do not stop, you know, unless they were forced to, you know. So, you know, that's such a touchy situation when it comes down to that. I mean, because now you're dealing with people's feelings and their emotions and their thought processes and what decision, you know, he made, what was the fact, you know, exactly why, who knows, you know, only he could probably answer that. Himself, you know, which brings up another situation, which I'd like to get into later. Anyway, though, how did that feel for you, you know, ending it the way that it did? That way you were obviously relieved, I would say. Or did you know, or didn't know exactly when it was going to stop, did you?
Stopped because he basically, if I remember correctly, he kind of like said it that like it will stop because, you know, like he always treated it more like a game. He
uh-huh.
said, yeah, because he treated it like a game. And
uh-huh.
and then he, I do
so,
remember.
So do you remember the exact words that he told you?
Not the exact words,
really,
but I do know.
In this. I would love to hear this, if you could possibly remember that. I mean, you don't have to. I don't want to force you to think about anything you don't want to, baby, believe me. But this
uh-huh.
is just so intriguing to me about what exactly would he say to you in that situation. Yeah.
I know he didn't want my mom to find out. And around the same time, his mother had come here, and my mom had issues with her, so... So my mom, they kind of like broke up for a couple of days. So maybe that's what happened, because my mom
mm-hmm.
basically told him that his mom could not be in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he was out of the house for a few weeks and he came back home. So I don't know if he told me that when he came back home or right before, probably after he came back home. So it was just like.
May I ask how old you were at that time?
I was 10.
You were 10.
That's when I came to this country.
mm-hmm. Well, what I was getting at was now that you say 10, that was the time that it stopped.
Yeah, it wasn't like
uh-huh.
too long. But
okay.
It didn't continue for too long. Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. Okay. Well, you know,
but,
it is. It is rare that does happen. But I have seen that before. You know, there's so many touchy situations comes into that because there's so many factors. There could have been a lot of things going on behind your back that you didn't know about. Okay, there could have been conversations. You know, that that nobody will ever know about due to the fact that that abuse ended on you. Who knows, you know? But is this individual still alive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. They're still together.
So, how do you feel about this individual today?
A lot of things happen. So not until I was 40 I spoke about this.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to talk about it because I went through like a very painful period. I had a bad breakup, and I was just desperate to sort of feel better. So I ended up going into like some self-development classes. Well, it was like this intensive thing on the weekend. And I don't remember what the question was, but luckily one of the coaches came to sit down with me and do the work. And I remembered that I just started crying hysterically because I knew that I had to say it. But then at the same time, I felt like my brain was telling me, no, you can't talk about it. And I became hysterical. I was like, I can't talk about it. So, luckily, I'm saying luckily because there was a lot of people and people were doing the work with all the regular people. But the person next to me got up and went to the bathroom and one of the coaches of the program sat next to me. So I think that helped for me to actually talk about it and just let it out. So I spoke about it, but it still took, that was like 6 years ago, it still took 3 years before I told my mom. I did talk to him about it probably 4 years ago. I invited him home because I had a friend that she was a coach, so she was telling me that I needed to talk to him about it. So I wrote him a letter. And basically, I don't even know what I wrote in there. I probably wrote how I felt. And I guess the feeling of blame and guilt, like I told him, you know, like I forgive you for whatever you did. And I did end up feeling mad after that because the first thing he told me is like, you know, don't tell your mom. So I don't even remember him apologizing. I just remember him just telling me, like, not to let my mom know. So I told him, you know, I'm not going to tell her. And then for whatever reason, talking and dealing with my friends, she would tell me, you have to tell your mom. At the program that I did, they had also told me, you have to tell her. But I refused to tell her. I did end up telling her that I had been sexually abused, and I told her that one of them was her cousin, but I didn't tell her anything else. And then and then about 3 years ago, I was having issues with my stepfather because we were working together and the relationship just got really tense and bad. He was always accusing me of trying to do bad things to him. So something came up. We were like having an argument in their home. And then I said something that's when apparently she questioned it. So I was like, okay, I have to tell her. So I didn't tell her that day, but I actually did a video because I couldn't face her. I did a video and I sent her that and I told her what he had done. So apparently she was very upset. She didn't know what to do. But then the next day she was like, nothing happened. So that was the effect of it.
Well, let me just add something right there to what you're doing. And this brings up such a huge issue with everything that we fight against. Okay. And also, you know, to try to help people on the road to recovery, okay, is the fact that exactly what you're saying, it took you 3 years, right, to tell your mom. That's a long time. It really is a long time. Well, look at it. it doesn't matter in a sense of what the abuse was. I'm not talking about you in particular. I'm talking about it on a worldwide scale, men, women, children, wherever. Why do you think it takes so long for us as a association, an organization that really tries to help people to come forward, okay? And this is what it's all about. It's that delay, you know, and you were really good about even being 3 years because I can tell you most people wait for 40, okay, 30,
well,
20
years. I was 40 when I first spoke about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were young. Considering on a national scale, you were a little younger than the national average. So that's I don't believe in the law of averages when it comes to that, only because of I think the times are changing drastically right now. And those scales, to me, are really obsolete at the moment. I would have to look at maybe another one 5 years from now, only because of the recent activities of ages. And, you know, they say 52, you know, yes, I see why, but just like yourself, and this is what I love to hear more than anything else, somebody that said they were 40, you know. Mm-hmm. And do you realize how many lives that could have been saved by just by coming out when you were 40, when you were 35, when you were 30? You know, and I'm not just you, Carter, I'm talking about everybody, you know, anybody around the world. If the sooner that you do this, I mean, you are – starting your life over, and I'm sure you can attest to this. Since you came out, how has your life changed? And you could just be brief because I know you're going to be going into that later, but just on a short, you know, scale, how do you feel since you did that?
Exactly what you said. I should have done it much sooner. Mm-hmm. It's not only protecting someone that can cause harm to other kids. It's also the guilt, the shame, the way we end up living.
Right,
we don't have our own lives. We're miserable of it.
And I don't want to cut you short, but I want you to say that thought because we're going to need that at the end of the show. Okay, that's going to be your gem. That's going to be your topic. That's going to be you. I mean, you are welcome to say anything, but we want you to include that and whatever else you have to say at the end, because this is your night, girl. You know, you go for it, scream if you have to. We want to hear it because I tell you, this is a great story. It really, really is. And every time that I hear the scenarios come up in your life and your age and the people that were involved, this is another small area of what happens in the common household, you know, and not to mention, you know, what could be happening at organizations, you know, that are organized in the world, but, you know, between, you know, the daycares and the churches and schools and, you know, we don't, you know, so yes. But I just wanted to thank you for that so much because that's what we need to hear more than anything from you. And that was just perfect. Absolutely perfect. So, So I'm really anxious to hear the rest of your story.
Yes, absolutely. And I just wanted to say one thing regarding what you just shared with us. I feel like I've heard this kind of theme, like a motif, of you actually, even as a young girl, you've had to protect your mom. Like, you really protected your mom. You didn't want your mom to know. You didn't want to rock the boat, you know. You had a hard time even telling your mom. Recollecting correctly, 3 years ago, it's like you've been protecting your mom, you know. And as a young child, we have to protect our parents from these horrible things. That is not the role of a child. That has significant impact on a child to feel like they have to protect their own parent. You weren't getting protection, whether your mom was aware of it or not, right? Just sounds like you were in this role of protecting your mom for a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember.
And you know, Kelsey, too, which brings up a point real quick, is the fact that, you know, with people waiting so long to come out, it's not the fact I think a lot of times is that they don't want to hurt their family members, you know, and you know, this is such a huge battle around the world about, yes, when you're in your 40s and you're in your 30s and you know, you're in your prime of making money, you're in your career, you're involved with young children growing up, the last thing that you want to do is bring turmoil into the family household, right? You know, by maybe people taking it the wrong way or being upset, it adds stress, you know. But I do want to add one thing to this, is that things don't have to be that way. You know, even with a lot of people, when they come forward, you know, they can remain anonymous, okay? So, you know, therefore, that leaves the door wide open for everybody. So I just wanted to add that real quick, okay?
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, thank you.
Let me see. Yeah. Do I continue or?
Yes, please. Please continue.
Okay. Okay, so I mean, there's not much more. I guess is the process of it was very slow. I'm grateful that I had my friend that always helped me through it. And because she felt that I needed to release certain things. That's why I wrote him a letter. But that, I don't think I felt much better after that. I thought that I was like, okay, I told him how I felt and I should be okay, but that was not true. And for whatever reason, she kept telling me that I had to tell my mom. And just like you said, you know, I felt like I needed to protect her. Like, oh my God, you know, how is she going to take this? And all I know is that my friend said, you know, Claudia, and she did say, Claudia, you know what, your mom probably knew about this. And I refused to believe this. And then she's like, your mom's not going to die from it, so you got to tell her. So it was, I didn't expect my mom to leave him because now they're much older. They have been together like over 30 years. And I told her, you know, I forgave him, and I don't expect you to leave him. But I was a little, it did sort of hurt that it just seemed like she was mad for like an hour, and then she was okay right after. And I've been working a lot on myself, and one of the things, like when I first spoke about this, I started like painting. So I know the process of doing art had helped me a lot because it helped me express myself. I had to do a painting for – a friend asked me to do a painting about my past for a show, and it was just so painful to even put it in there. I couldn't. And my friend is like, you have to put it in there. So I just wrote something different. I think – what did I write? I should have it – something like, I can't remember what I wrote in the painting, but I did not put like sexual abuse. Like I still didn't want anyone to know. I put like inappropriate or something else that kind of like signified that, but it was a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a way that
you express, you know, maybe some of your feelings is art?
Yeah, because I didn't express mm-hmm. them. Like, I never talked to anyone about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
very
that's kind of like, mm-hmm. that's a relief. And
sure.
And basically, with my mom, something else happened right after that. I felt really disappointed at her because she did something that hurt me. In order to protect him. So it's been difficult emotionally to realize, you know, I'm a mother, I have a son, but I feel like I would never like not protect my son or do something to hurt him. So she did something to hurt me in order to protect him. And that was like another painful thing, like something, it was like, okay, you know, I endure abuse by this man, I basically ruined most of my life because I wasn't free to be myself. You know, I was just the effect of my coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally tell her, and then she still tries to hurt me. So, you know, it's a big process because it's like I had to understand, you know, I don't know her experience as a child. I don't know what she has gone through. I know culturally, you know, certain women her age, they, you know, everything is their husband, so they feel like they have to protect her husband. You know, I have my own life, so she probably felt like Claudia's going to be okay. I just got to take care of him. So I tried to be understanding about that. I mean, I didn't talk to her for almost a year, but then I talk to her. I don't talk to him at all because, you know, I was thinking that I was hoping that he would feel bad about it, but I think he felt, this is my, you know, me assuming that he felt like such a victim that his way to protect himself was always to see, you see, Claudia hates me and she's trying to hurt me. So my, you know, I realized that I needed to have boundaries with them. So I just keep myself away from them. And I talk to my mom only when it's needed or something important happens in the family. But I don't keep much relationship with them. And I don't talk to him at all.
Claudia, I think it takes a lot of courage to acknowledge that right now. And there are people listening, there are a lot of people listening that are in very similar shoes to yours, what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Having those people that were, you know, bound to protect you as a child and, you know, bound to you. I mean, this is your biological mother. That I'm just going to say from what you said, you mean she like kind of believed it for an hour and then she kind of went back to pretending it didn't happen. I mean, and protecting your stepfather, protecting you. I mean, you said you're a mom. That to me feels like a betrayal, almost like a betrayal. That's a betrayal, right? And,
exactly.
It's a betrayal. And from my own experience, I've heard other NAFTA members, come on. Sometimes I think it's very possible that the betrayal of those people, like our mothers or our caregivers, our guardians that were supposed to protect us, that those betrayals hurt more than the abuse itself. It's a deep wound,
mm-hmm.
And you could understand, you're a mother yourself, and you said it, you know, I've got a son, I think you said a child, and I would do anything to protect my child, right? That is, you know,
mm-hmm.
I understand that. I'm a mother, too. I mean, I'm like, you hurt my child, you better watch out, right? Because nobody mm-hmm. hurts my child, right? I run a moving van, and you know, to save my child. Like, that is a motherly instinct, is to protect our children. And that betrayal really, really, really hurts. And it's a huge grief and a huge loss. And I think you're very brave in talking about that because there's so many of us that have very similar experiences to that and that feel that pain, right? That pain of just that massive disappointment, you know, that I do term betrayal because it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it helps to know you're not alone, right? People can understand how that feels. And you sharing it, people are going, oh, my gosh, yeah, it really, really hurts. And I think we have to grieve this. And I think you've also talked about how you set some really healthy boundaries for yourself, which is a big part of the healing process, right? I mean, setting boundaries where you said, okay, listen, if you're not going to change it sounds like your mom has a pattern behavior of just kind of looking the other way, you know. Not acknowledging what happened. Well, you set a great boundary protecting yourself, right? That hurts you. And I think setting boundaries can be really hard when we're going through the healing process. We have to learn to do that. And that's part of moving, right, and through recovery. is making sure that we're not putting ourselves in the same place where those who hurt us that do not wish to acknowledge that they're hurting us, and those that do not wish to change their behavior, you know, we have to change, right? We have to allow ourselves to be a place where we won't be hurt anymore. And you just really nicely described how you've done that. It's not easy.
Mm-hmm. So, Claudia,
no,
have you ever told your story before like this?
No, not like this. No, I started telling when I was in that program, that like intensive weekend, they follow up with like a 10-week class, and slowly I started telling people, and it was very difficult. Then slowly I've been telling more people, and I see how good it is because I feel like free of relief. I'm able to talk about it. At some point I couldn't talk about it. and I do plan to talk more about it because just like you said, you know, when we don't say it, we're protecting the abuser. And then the victim is just having to pay with all the consequences of it.
Yeah, Claudia, you are such a smart woman, I can tell. I praise you for your entire night tonight. I'm just blown away by your demeanor because I have seen so many people that haven't handled the night the way you are tonight. I have to praise you. Everything that you have done for us tonight is incredible because of your age, one, kids involved, the family issues. I mean, this is what the world needs to know, you know, and your message is powerful. I don't know if you realize how extensive this is tonight. It's deep, very, very deep,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing a great job at it. You really, really are. So keep it up. I just want to praise you for that. I have to say that to you right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I totally.
Thank you.
You're a very strong person. You have a lot of strength. It takes a lot of strength. And you have a lot of strength.
It takes a lot of strength. I mean, I've done a lot of work. I've been making sure I do a lot of work. Now with my art, like I want to be able to help other women. So I actually, like I'm starting to do workshops. At first I wanted to deal more with this, like with the abuse of the child sexual abuse, but it was just a little too deep for me. And it's really painful. That's when I started my healing. That was 2015, so 6 years ago. But this year, basically early this year, like I wanted to do this workshop and help women. But then seeing how deep it is, the abuse, I in my research, that I read the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And,
yeah.
And it was just
a great book.
Yeah, it was just, it's an amazing book. And I feel like everyone should read it because to me, like, I cry so much, like, seeing how.
So what exactly
you know,
did you get out of that book the most? What did you get out of that book the most? Because I read it too. And you said
what
you
I got
fine,
out of
but
the
what
book.
Did you, yes. What did you get out of that book?
I became aware of that my life,
Bingo.
My previous life, wasn't my life. It was just the coping mechanisms. Like, I lived in survival mode. And, I mean, up to now, I've never been married, and I have a very difficult time having a relationship with a man. So the effects are so strong that, and that's because I never said anything in the first place. So, yes, that's why I keep agreeing with you. If people will speak up about this, like, early, they don't have to go through so much grief and pain. They can actually learn to live their life the way it's meant to live, because I do believe that
mm-hmm.
we're meant to enjoy our lives and not have to live with pain and remorse and shame and guilt.
So do you have any family that actually support you at all, you know, with everything that's happened to you?
I only told two people in my family, the uncle that I grew up with, well, he still lives in Colombia, so he knows about it, but, you know, he just doesn't know what to say about it. So I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, I have one cousin that is very close to me, and she knows, but I haven't told anyone else.
Is she listening tonight?
No, I didn't tell her.
No? Okay. I was just gonna let her know that she's an angel because she needs to be there for you, absolutely. Because that's such a huge part, you know, in the recovery is to have support, you know, whether it be a good friend or family or whoever it may be, you know. But you know, you brought up a good situation earlier about staying away, you know, from situations that, you know, may. I hate to use the word trigger, but, you know, things get set off when you're in an environment that could create, you know, stress. So, you know, there's so much that goes into these things, and that's part of the healing and recovery road. It really is, and it's such a hard road, you know. But I can tell you this, is that with you coming out tonight and telling your story is so huge. And let me say this to you, is that I'm a 45-year survivor, okay, 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear a story like yours, you actually support me, you know, by doing what you're doing, you know. And this is why I'll always do this the rest of my life, because of listening to what I'm listening to tonight. And I have to, you know, commend you for that, because even when people come out and share – the littlest things, you know, that turns out to be the biggest things most of all, you know. It's those little things that slip through the cracks, right? Those are the ones that we got to stop. So this is what it is, you know. So I just want to thank you for everything you've done for me tonight, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are saying the same thing. I can feel it. And trust me, I know that there's a lot of people out there that just really loving your story, really.
Thank
so go ahead. Where do we leave off with your age bracket?
Well,
Penelope, do you want to pick
well,
up?
Well, I just wanted to ask Claudia. So, I mean, we've got about, you know, 15 minutes left for you, about 14 minutes left until I have to start closing out the show. And I really wanted to know, you know, you've got a little bit of time left, but doesn't it go fast, right? And I'd like you to just tell us, you know, if there's something that you wanted to tell us at any part of your life or continue on your story or talk a little bit more about the amazing, amazing art, therapy, and healing that you're doing now. You're using this vehicle to support other women. Whatever you want to talk about, I want to give you an opportunity to make sure that you get to say what you wish to share. So I'm going to let you have that right now.
Okay, thank you. Well, through the last few months that I've been trying to figure out, like, how can I help someone like me? And it's not easy to figure it out. You know, it took, for me, it took, like, extreme pain to actually get me to that point that I was desperate for change.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what I want to say is that, you know, most of us, we're aware of the problem. And I feel like when we're aware that, or maybe, you know, like I lived up until age 40, I was unaware of how that had affected my life. But when I opened up, when I spoke about it, I became aware of the problem. And it just takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience. It takes time to be with the right people. I feel that it's important to educate ourselves. And, you know, like what you guys are doing, it's amazing because it helps people understand that there's more people with the same stories. But besides just having the stories, like how are we healing? And the healing process has definitely not been easy. It's been extremely painful because reading this book a lot of times, and I tell people, like, I just lay down on my floor and I cry And then I have learned to use, you know, like having, I guess these are coping mechanisms also. Like I've learned how to write gratitude or listen to mantras and meditate to get myself to relax and just to be compassionate to myself. Because I believe the guilt and the shame is still there. And then I just have to remind myself that, you know, what did I know? I was 10 years old. And not only was I 10 years old, but the abuse happened before that. So I don't know, you know, I had already created like a system that I just stay quiet and wouldn't talk. So I think it's just for me, it was just like taking the steps to find answers, to find the right people. I actually started doing therapy recently, but I'm not doing the therapy that I want to do. I want to do, I think it's called EMDR, because I do want to remember. Yeah. I want to remember what happened. I don't know why, but I feel the need to know exactly what happened to me when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
I've heard great things with it, and hope that it works for you. And I would really be interested later on in time to see, you know, how it works for you.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do it yet. I was just doing talk therapy, but
I can tell you it takes time to get in too. You know, to make an appointment for that. Some of them I've seen, they like 3 months backed up. So you might want to look into that a little bit before you try. So, well, good luck.
Thank you. Some of the places, they don't have that type of therapy, so I got to find the right place.
Exactly.
You know, that goes with the insurance.
Right. Well, you know, that brings up a good point, too. And that brings up a really good point, too, about, you know, finding therapists and people, you know, that can work with you the way, mm-hmm. you know, you need to be worked with, so to speak. In other words, not every therapist is for each individual. I've heard of people going, you know, to see 10 different people before they found that one, or they've you know, automatically right off the bat, yes, this is for me. So, you know, so how do you feel about that? Have you looked around? Have you searched, or what's your method of finding a therapist?
I called a couple of places because the truth is that before I used to be against therapy because I was in my belief that I'm okay, I don't need a therapist. But after reading the book, that's what actually got me to, you know, I should probably talk to a therapist because the healing is not like a one-day shot, you're healed. It takes time. And even if I feel free and much better and happier, there's still more work to do. So I did start searching. Right now I'm doing like talk therapy and it's only over the phone. And she's good, but she knows that I want a very specific type of therapy. So
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to get this point and it might help make a connection for you. So we have a NASCA. So by the way, once you come on the show and tell your story, you're a member of the NASCA family, you've got a whole bunch of new, you know, family members within NASCA. Mm-hmm. We have a NASCA member. Her name is Mary Knight, and it's Knight. She's a filmmaker, and she made a film, and it's entitled Am I Crazy? And she went through the EMDR and the hypnosis in her movie. But she also, she's so tenacious, she interviewed Dr. literally in the movie. She got a hold of and interviewed Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're very interested in connecting with her and watching the movie.
Yeah.
And they'll give you, she might have some connect, she might be able to connect you more quickly with the right people. And I can.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So because of, you know, and so I watched her. I couldn't believe that she got in front of Dr., you know, Vanderkolk, which she did. But you, she was very tenacious in her movie. You'll see her go through that that EMDR process and her bring up those memories. That'll give you a little bit of a, you know, snapshot of what that's all about. So I just wanted to mention that. And I'm happy to connect you with Mary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
And also, too, that's a good idea. That brings up a point, too, Claudia, is that we have so many platforms out here available for everybody. And that's just a great example, same thing. So, you know, we need to make sure that we educate people and letting them know that if there's anything that NASA could ever do for anyone out there, we have so many avenues and platforms. You know, and I also, you know, have my own organization. So we have unlimited, in my eyes, of avenues of recovery. And, you know, we have anywhere from, you know, people that are just down-to-earth people that are experienced at exactly what we went through, to me, are the best people because they lived it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they experienced it. And those are the ones that need each other, okay? And it's the only way. We have to stick together. But we also have to change the laws in this world for our kids, you know? And that's just what it's all about. I know we have about 9 minutes left. Penelope, I think that this is her time, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's been a great show tonight. It really has. And I can't, you know, express how proud I am of you, of the way that you told your story. It's, you know, very intriguing, very deep, emotional, you know, it's everything that the life, you know, of an abused, you know, victim and survivor, and also with the grooming, you know, this is the classic mm-hmm. of it. This is what people need to see and hear, because without you, you know, we won't exist. You know, people need to know, at your age, what happened, this and that. They have to recognize, you know, and that's what you're doing. You're making them really realize what the true reality is saving lives.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't even realize the grooming part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're helping people. I'm going to read the last sentence of your bio. I'm now beginning to do art workshops and courses to support women in their healing using art as the vehicle. So I love that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I'm creating a program. I created a coloring book a while ago, and I know that my art is about helping women, but, you know, I'm developing more and more. And the workshop, the way I see it is, because art is a way to express yourself. And when you express yourself, you're able to release suppressed emotions. And the beauty of it is that it's a safe place. And the work that you do is, like, very personal. So it's not even, like, the person has to talk about, like, I went through this. It's, like, depending on the questions and the information that I give them, they can start working on their own and get them to a place to think and visualize their life, how it's been in the past, what it is in the present, and kind of like start creating a vision of like what they want in the future. Because to me, becoming aware of what our past is so important to move forward in the future. And I notice a lot of women, they have issues because people don't want to talk about it, and they say, you know, like whoever has not gone through the same experience, they said, oh, it's in the past, you know, you just have to get over it, it's okay. But it's not in the past, because it's part of our body. You know, we experience it. We experience the pain in so many different ways. So, but when you're able to talk to someone that has gone through the same experience and that person listens, and then with art, you know, having the opportunity to actually look at your past and sort of like find a way to start moving forward, because that's like my goal. It's like how to help people move forward, because so many people are just stuck in pain, and it makes me sad to know that women have to live the way I lived for so long, and I don't think people should be stuck in pain.
Well, they're stuck in pain because they don't do what? They don't come forward, right? They don't tell a story.
Yeah.
This is exactly, you know, what it is, and we're all in this together. You know, if someone is out there, you know, and they're ready to tell a story, it's going to change your life. It's going to change your life forever.
Mm-hmm. So, Claudia, I'm very curious. I'm very curious. And first of all, I do want to let you know, and I'm going to echo what John just said, you just are a shining light in this world. I mean, you know, you can take something that was so painful and something that was just so, you know, horrifically painful for you, and have that light and that desire to help others, right? That empathy, you know, you know that pain and they want to help other people, you know, transform that pain, you know, work through that pain. It's
Excuse
just,
me.
Bless you. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And my question for you is, like everybody else has ever been before they come on the show, I know a little bit nervous, you know, we're telling our story. How do you feel right now? Because we're at the end. We're at the very end. How are you feeling?
I feel good because I didn't start crying, so that was a good thing. it does feel good, and I do realize that it's empowering telling the story and getting, like, the support that I'm getting from both of you. Because at the end of the day, you know, we all want the same thing. We want to help other people. And I guess the empathy just comes because of my experience.
There's that word again.
Yeah, I'm
sorry for the noise. But, yeah, empathy. The empathy.
Yeah,
I love it. That's what it is. Hello.
So I see it. No, I've seen people, and I have, you know, like my friend that has helped me, she's been amazing, but there's a lot of things she doesn't understand because she never went through it. She comes from a very loving, happy family, you know, father and mother and the whole thing. And no one that has never gone through it is going to understand it. I don't think it's possible for anyone to really understand unless you have gone through it. So... As a mom, I think, you know, I wouldn't want my child or any other child to go through the same thing. Or as a woman, I want other women to be able to be free of that, because the way I feel now is, my life is completely different than what it was 5-6 years ago, even 4 years ago, 3 years ago. So,
yeah.
I
bet your life's different than it was an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
You just don't know it yet.
Yeah, it's true. So that's why I do want to keep doing the work, because it's not only helping other people. At the same time, I'm helping myself. And I don't know. I just believe that's what life is about.
Well, I think John and I can both echo your sentiments. And that is exactly the platform that NAFTA offers to adult survivors of child abuse. And you just got here this evening with Claudia. And Claudia, I just wish to thank you. John and I both wish to thank you for being so brave and coming on the show tonight and telling your story. You truly are helping so many people.
Yes,
you
are.
So I have
thank
not arrived at the show. Yeah, you're welcome. We salute you. I do need to wrap the show. We have a few seconds left. I want to encourage people to visit NAFTA.org. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We do appreciate the contributions because we are fully funded by our members and through contributions from our. And as I always end the show, I like to say, it is all of our responsibility to keep our children safe. So if you see something, please say something. I wish to thank you. Thank Jonathan, Claudia, and good night.
Okay, thank you
good night,
so much.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done. Love Talk Radio.